Today, I wanted to talk to the parents about your child is in therapy. You've reached the point of going to therapy, and now how do you get the most out of therapy to help your child make the most progress as quickly as possible? And so the first thing I stress to all parents is that take a breath, relax. It is a process and a journey. It is not something you're not going to be, more than likely, not going to be done in 6 months. You're not going to be in and out of here. This is a road that you're traveling now. And so appreciate the road, find the joy in the road, and come to peace with that versus trying to get it done in 6 months, because that will stress you out. So the first thing I want to talk today about is what to look for. And so you've reached the point where you want to go to private therapy. And that is a great thing. It's supportive of the school. It helps the child. School therapists are dedicated. They work hard. But the reality is their caseloads are high, paperwork's high, and private therapy can do wonders to supplement school therapy. To maximize therapy, the first thing I encourage all parents, find the right therapist. There are different philosophies out there. There's different methods of treatment. You have to find for yourself what works best for you, for your family. There's just a lot of methods. If you don't mesh with your therapist, you're going to constantly have conflict. And that, not in a bad way, but you're just not going to, it's going to hold back progress. So meet with therapists. Most therapists will meet with you. They'll tell you their philosophy. They'll tell you how they approach therapy. And then figure out and decide what works best for your family. And you also need to feel comfortable with them, not only with the therapist, but the environment with which they work. Do they work in a hospital setting? Do they work in a clinical setting? Do they work out of their home? Some people are very comfortable in one setting, not so much in another. And so you and your child, actually, both have to feel comfortable. If you're not comfortable, your child is going to sense it from you. If your child's not comfortable, they're not going to make progress. So it's got to be something that everybody's comfortable with and feels secure and safe with. The other thing I encourage parents is don't give up on a place or a therapist right away, because there is a bonding time that has to take place, and that is critical. I tell every client I meet with, you have to give the bonding time. I'm not going to jump into therapy the first session because that's only going to scare the kid, particularly the little ones. You can't jump in and start asking them to say things when they don't even know you. They have to bond with them just like they would any other caretaker, really, especially since I'm going to be pushing them beyond their safety zone. I'm going to be pushing them to do things that are difficult or hard. They have to feel comfortable. They have to like me. They have to want to please me. And so those first couple sessions are really more, it's more, much more crucial to bond with a therapist than anything else. And I always tell the parents that also gives me time to find out what they're interested in. I let them wander and play. What's going to motivate them? Do they really go to the cars or to the ball toys? Do they want to play lots of games? What is it that they're interested in? And it gives me time to observe them in a more natural setting to see what their skills are. Because the first time I meet with them, very few actually talk or do whatever that anything, they're because it's a whole new environment with new people. So give your therapist that time to bond, give them time to establish roots, and then you should start to see progress and start to see things being worked on. So don't jump ship right away. However, if you've gone a long time and you're still not comfortable or you feel there isn't progress, it might not be right and it's okay to switch. But jumping from therapist to therapist will impede progress, because every time you jump, your child has to learn a new environment, new therapy rules, new sets of expectations, new everything. And so that's going to set back where you had already reached. So while I don't encourage staying with someone that's not making progress, you also can't jump. And there's no magic timeline. You just kind of have to, it's kind of a gut feeling if it's going somewhere or if it's not going somewhere. So once you found the right place, you found the right therapist, you like them, your child is happy and content, now what do you do? What can you do to maximize your child's therapy? And this isn't just speech, but OT, PT, music therapy, wherever they're going, what can you do? And so one of the first things I encourage parents, particularly this is to parents where children are in multiple therapies. So I encourage them to get all the therapists on the same page, whether they email, they call, there's a notebook, some way, let everyone know what you're working on, including school therapists, because when everybody's on the same page, then the child's presented with a consistent front. So if there's a behavior problem, if there's a consistent feedback and a consistent consequence for a behavior, the child then starts to learn, I can't do that anywhere, as opposed to, oh, well, I can't do that at Miss Sarah's, but school I'm fine with, because they don't know about it. And so if everybody knows what page you're on and what the child's working on, progress happens a lot faster. I encourage parents, if your school has an IEP, share that with your private therapist. It's always good for us to know what the school is working on, because schools tend to work on 3 to 5 goals. I may not work on those quite as much, because those are the only 3 to 5 goals the school's working on. So I may not harbor on that, because he's getting enough of that at school, and I may do other goals that support those, or that the therapist can't work on because that's not in the IEP. If possible, like I said, have the therapist talk. This is even good for knowing what the child's capable of. I have one little boy who was using words with me, used words at home. Mom went into school and he was not speaking at all and only using picture communication. And she took him away and she said, he can talk. And they're like, he doesn't speak here. And she's like, because you're not demanding it. And so they actually came out and observed me. They observed him talking from mom. And from that point forward, they reduced his ability to use pictures and demanded he use words, because he could. But he had them convinced, like, this is all I can do is use pictures. And so, and that was the lack of knowing what his capabilities were in all environments. I also, as a private therapist, will provide IEP goals for schools. So a lot of times what I'll do, not write the goal per se, but I'll say, here's the 20 things I'm working on. And then the school therapist can then kind of look at those and go, oh, I see this, this, and this. So she may choose those, because then, again, we're both supporting each other's goals and what we're addressing and what we're working on. And anytime the child gets multiple people working on the same goal, progress is going to happen faster and you're going to see movement forward. I also encourage parents significantly to tell me not only what school speech might be doing, what is OT doing? What is music therapy doing? What is physical therapy doing? I'm comfortable with I've done a lot of co-treatment. If your child has an issue where they're seeing multiple therapists, I would suggest strongly finding a therapist that's comfortable with co-treatment, because if you let them know, like, oh, we're working on cutting or we're working on this, I can incorporate that. And if you tell me, like, this is what they say or this is the cues they give him, it's not going to be my focus, but if we're doing a craft, instead of me cutting out the pieces, I'll let the child cut out the pieces, so that while we're still working on the language, he's also incorporating that OT. If there is sensory, if OT says, oh, he works great if he gets such and such, I'll incorporate that, because when sensory needs are met, I get language. So if I know what the child needs to for them to feel centered, I get more language. So it only helps me. If we're working, you know, I go outside and we'll work on the swing set. If we're working on the child's core and they want to hold on to the strings, I'll encourage that, as opposed to putting them in the baby swing. We might put them on the low normal swing. So there's things that we can do to support other therapies while still making communication or whatever our primary focus is. I had one client that every couple of months, the entire team would meet. We would sit down. It was phenomenal. It's the only time it's ever happened, but man, in a dream world, I would do it in a heartbeat. We had the educational tutor. We had two OTs, a speech therapist, a music therapist, the parents, and everybody went around the table and said, here's what I'm working on. Here's what he's doing. He made so much progress because everybody incorporated everybody else's goals. Everybody was on the same page. He got away with nothing as far as, you know, I can't do this. It was a pretty amazing approach. And in a dream world, I would do that for every kid. It was very, very awesome. I would also, the other huge thing I encourage parents for progress for your kids is make sure you have time to talk to every therapist. 5 to 10 minutes at the end of every session. I build that into my sessions most places do. If they don't, I strongly, strongly encourage the parents. Talk to your child's therapist at the end of every session. How'd they do today? Would you work on? You know, I take that time to tell parents, this is what worked, this is what didn't work. He's struggling with this sound. We're doing great here. Here's what you can work on at home. Here's how you can carry it over. You know, here's things you can try and cues to give him. But that's critical, because home carryover is what's going to make the difference. You know, I can help your child, absolutely, but I only see your child once a week, maybe once every other week. You see your child every day. So your input and your daily practice is going to make huge differences in progress and and how quickly you see it. So take that consultation time. Talk to your therapist. Find out what they're working on. Find out how they're cueing your child, and learn. Because sometimes, you know, what comes natural to us as a therapist, you may not understand as a parent. And that's okay. You shouldn't. You don't have our degree. But ask us, how do I cue? What do I need to say? Because you also don't want to do it wrong, because then you're creating a bad habit that we have to fix later. So you don't want to do it wrong either. So find out how they're doing that, and ask questions. If you don't understand, show me how you do that. Tell me what words you say. And so to that point, then I tell parents, bring a notebook. Bring a notebook, write down what I say. You know, here's the cues, here's what we're working on. Because then more than once, parents will ask me, what did you tell me to do last week? And while I love and want to help you, please don't ask me to remember what I told you a week ago to do with your child, because it's off the top of my head. Like, try this, try this, try this. And I have since seen 25 more patients or 30 more, and I don't remember what I told you, you know, because it's just in my arsenal of tools. And so I'm probably not going to be able to recall. If you said something like this, what was it? That will trigger my memory and I can explain more. But you can use that notebook to write down any, you know, and then while you're at home and you say, oh, I have to ask her about such and such, you open that notebook, write it down, and then you don't forget. And you don't, you know, you can bring that notebook and say, this happened this week, I didn't know what to do, or he did this and we weren't sure if that was right or wrong. You know, that's a lifeline between you and I that can truly affect progress and make progress happen much faster. The other thing I tell parents, ask me, ask me, ask me, ask me. Some parents will leave and months later, like, I didn't know why you were doing that. Ask me. There's much more method to my madness than parents realize. And they often don't ask, but make assumptions in their head based on what they see. And that's never a safe way to go about it. And, you know, so what looks like play to you and me not being involved is me observing what they want to play with and what's going to motivate. Me standing a couple feet away and talking to the child is not me being engaged, but I want to see if they can use the skill while they're distracted. Because if the skill falls apart while they're playing with something else, then it's not a mastered skill. If I can stand, you know, a couple feet away and talk to the child and they're still making the sounds right, or they're still using the right language while they're playing in the sandbox, that tells me that that skill is being mastered, because they don't have to put all their focus on it. But from an outside observer just watching me stand away and somewhat talking to their child, parents assume that I'm not doing something. I'm testing that skill. Or games. That's a huge one I hear about school therapists. I hear it about private. Like, why are you playing games? And so I always encourage parents, or tell parents, games are fundamentally one of the most important things you can do with your child. There are so many skills I'm building with games. Not only cognitive and language skills of predicting what's going to happen and planning and strategizing, which is higher level language skills, patience to wait their turn. So there's a lot of social skills built into a game, but there's also a lot of multitasking, because very rarely, and most adults know, do we ever get to sit and talk. And any mom can tell you that. You're doing dishes and talking, you're cooking dinner and talking, you're doing laundry and talking, you're doing two sets of homework at the same time and talking to two different kids. So you rarely get to sit and just look at your child. So as we grow into adulthood, we need to learn to communicate and do something else. If communication takes our sole focus, that's going to be extremely challenging as an adult. And so games allow me, a lot of times, I'll try to carry on a conversation with the kid and make them play the game. So now they have to know where they're at in the game, know what they're doing, but then they also have to follow my conversation. And building that multitasking skill is extremely difficult. Either they'll focus on the conversation and they no longer know where they're at in their game, or they're moving the wrong pieces, or they focus on the game and they're not responding to conversation. So there's a lot of different levels to games, and I'm not just pulling out a game to pass time. But again, parents don't, you don't necessarily know that or see that, and that's okay. But if you don't know something, ask. There's therapists can always explain what we're doing, why we're doing it, the reason, the skills we're working on. And there's rarely a time I'm working on one skill. I'm usually, we might be practicing a sound and then we take a turn in the game. And so now we're working on different level, different skills in the game. And then we might be following directions and doing something else. And then we go back to the sound. And so there's really several things I'm working on at once. And so you're never going to see an isolated drill type thing from many therapists. So ask. Don't be afraid to ask. And I love to talk about what I do. So I'm more than happy to tell you what I'm doing. I also encourage parents to help progress include all those people that care for your child. If your child goes to a daycare, if they go to a babysitter, even grandma, grandpa, aunts, uncles, anybody that sees your child fairly regularly, tell them what's going on. This helps, again, that consistency across the board with whoever your child's with. And while you may be busy, grandmas have lots of time to practice and sit and play and read books and do things. Babysitters, when somebody's napping, might have a lot of time to sit down and help your child. And so include them, let them know what's going on, how, what we're working on, how to cue your child, because they can be very helpful in the progress as well. I also encourage parents to make it fun. Please don't ever call speech therapy work. I don't want to go to work. You don't want to go to work. Your child doesn't want to work. Don't be like, go work now. Let's go play. Play sounds much more fun. Play sounds much more willing, and I want to do this because I'm playing. So when you sit down and say, we got to do our speech work, I wouldn't want to sit down either and do it. I want to play. Pull out the game and play. Because drill's never very fun. And so if you play and incorporate into play, your child's much more willing to practice at home, and progress, again, will happen faster. Try to give as specific feedback as possible, and I encourage parents this a lot. Don't say good job if your child says it wrong, because all that tells your child is, oh, I did it right, and they're not, and so then they're not going to correct that because you told them good job, which to them translates to, I did that right. And so now you're supporting an incorrect habit versus a correct habit. So praise the effort, praise the trying, don't praise the production if it's not correct. You know, you did a great job trying. Next time we have to make that S a little bit better, or great job, but your shoelaces are a little loose. They might come undone. Let's try a time a little bit tighter, you know. And I just read a great one just recently. It's called Not Yet. And so they said, instead of saying you didn't do it, you don't have it just yet. Not yet, but you'll get there. And so then it feeds that positive energy that they will get it. They're just not there, not yet. And so I liked that approach as well. And be honest with your child. This is a huge one. I'm totally honest with my clients, and I'm honest with my parents. And this is important because children with special needs are not necessarily very self-aware, and they don't hear their mistakes. So again, if you go back to good job and you don't tell them what's wrong, they're not going to necessarily hear that and self-correct on their own, particularly children in the area of social communication. They're not just going to pick up that it's wrong. You need to be honest with them. And you, as a loving parent, are going to say something much more gently than a child who is unconcerned with whether or not your child's feelings are going to be hurt. And so you can say something more gently. You can introduce talk about a concept they might be struggling with much softer and more lovingly than a child who's is concerned about your child's feelings. And so your honesty may help them prevent the need from honesty from a peer, which can hurt a lot more. So be honest with your child. If you see something's wrong or something's awkward, approach it with them. The other thing, another huge thing that can stop progress and really slow progress, and I encourage parents not to do, please, please, Do not pretend to understand your child. Don't pretend you saw something if you didn't see it. Don't pretend that you understood what they said if you didn't. Because again, that sends the wrong message that my speech is clear. And it can have negative effects in a couple of ways. One, again, they think what they said is clear, so they don't feel the need to correct it. And two, if you're constantly saying, then when it comes to speech, they say, well, why do I have to go to speech? She doesn't understand me. You always understand me, Mom. You know, and so now they question why they have to go to therapy, because Mom always gets it. So that's just that crazy lady who doesn't understand me. So again, that goes back to being honest. It goes back to being open and giving specific feedback. If you don't understand it, I'm trying really hard to understand what you're saying. Tell me one more time. And so, you know, and give them back what you've heard. And if you truly cannot get it, tell them what you got and say, can you show me? Can you take me there? Can you draw it? You know, try to give them other avenues. And again, that's not just speech. Parents will say, oh yeah, that was great. And they never looked at a child's handwriting or how they wrote their name. And they say, good job, because you're in a hurry. Except then again, if their letters aren't formed right or if they're not in the right spot, then you're again praising something that's not correct. Praise the effort, not the production. So then, the other thing, the last thing that really helps progress is try to be consistent with attending therapy. And believe me, I'm a mom of three. Life happens. Sometimes you need a break, plain and simple. You just can't go anywhere again one more night. And that's okay. But inconsistency in therapy will slow progress, particularly if you take a big break. So like, I've had parents take a break for the summer, and I get it. You want your summer off. You want the break. However, just like school sends home that summer packet because kids regress and they aren't keeping up with it. If you take 3.5 months off, when you come back to therapy, they're not going to forget everything they learned, but that first month is going to be reviewing progress they've already made. We're going to have to get back to where they were. So really, you didn't lose 3 months, you lost 4 months. So most therapies, at least some therapies I know, are flexible. If you want somewhat of a break, go every other week, go every third week, go, you know, take a shorter break. Instead of taking 3 months, take 1 month. You know, there's other ways that you can take some breaks without having a huge gap in therapy. I know, and especially early on, you know, we'll have some clients that come 1 week and then they skip, and then they come 2 weeks and then they miss 2 weeks. And that's very hard to get a footing and get started in therapy when it's not consistent. And I know it can be difficult. I truly do. But it's, if you truly want progress, if you want to see that movement forward, the consistency with therapy is extremely important. Because while they're not going to make huge strides every week, you're maintaining. And that might be sometimes the only time your child gets that focused one-on-one input. And that's critical to maintaining and moving forward with progress. The next thing I wanted to do to talk about is things to keep in mind in any therapy, just things to keep in the back of your head when it comes to progress, when it comes to therapy. And the first one is don't get discouraged. You know, you need to at times you need to step back and look at the overall progress, because week to week, like anything else, you don't see your kids grow, but then all of a sudden Aunt Jo comes in from out of town and she's like, oh my gosh, they grew another foot. And you're like, really? You know, like, they seem the same height. It's the same thing with progress. Day to day, week to week, you don't see these huge steps, but then you stand back and go, wow, 6 months ago, you know, grandma couldn't understand him, and now grandma saw him and said, oh my gosh, he sounds so great. And truly, people who don't see your child every day are often the best judge of progress. So somebody that sees them every couple weeks, you know, once a month, they're the ones that'll give you most honest feedback, because they see the bigger strides much more so than you as a parent are going to see that. So take a deep breath and try not to focus on, he said it last week, he didn't say it this week. That's going to happen, and that's okay. That doesn't mean your child's not moving forward. I also encourage parents, keep in mind there are building blocks, like with any learning. You can't multiply and divide before you add and subtract. So what may seem insignificant and small and not very grandiose as far as, you know, progress. It's a building block. You know, before I can say words, we've got to say sounds. And sounds may not seem like a whole lot, and they're still not necessarily communicative, but I can't say a whole word of sounds with four and five and six different sounds if I can't say those sounds by themselves. And so we need to work on small individual sounds, you know, before we can make the big sounds. In OT, you can't start forming letters if you can't draw a straight line and a diagonal line, you know. So it's still not letters, but by mastering those individual lines, you're going to get to letters. And there's those building blocks. So those are crucial, and recognize those. See those in your therapy. And this is kind of a, I'm going to be a firm one. Get a backbone. Because children with special needs can manipulate you just like any other child. And if they feel you pity them, they will play that. And they will cry, and I can't do it. And I mean, my favorite story, my one little boy looked at me one time years ago, and all the kids were playing in the sandbox, and he didn't want to play. And I said, come play. He said, I can't do that. I'm autistic. He said, if you can say that, you most certainly can go play. He didn't want to, and it was uncomfortable, and he would rather play by himself. If he can recognize that and say that, he can be encouraged to come and play, even for a short amount of time. And so, but other people would say, oh, okay, and they back off. And they will cry. Children will cry. I just had one this morning. He cried and cried because he didn't want to do it. And the minute after we finished the task, hand over hand, most of it, I said, all done. Within 10 seconds, the tears were gone. He was smiling and running and swinging. He didn't want to do what I was asking him to do. It's not that he couldn't do it. He simply just didn't want to do it. And so, and they will make you feel bad for them. And you have to be firm. And if you know your child can do something, demand that they do it. If you know they can say something, demand it at least once or twice, at least the effort. It doesn't have to be right, but if they've now been able to figure out or through therapy they can ask for juice, then they have to say juice, or they have to make the effort. They don't get to point anymore because you know they can say it. Every time you let them get away with the easier route, the longer progress is going to take, because they're a child. Any child, even adults, will take the path of least resistance, the easiest path. And learning to do something that you can't do, whether it's communicating or tying shoes or whatever, that it's hard and it's work, and there's a hill to climb, and it will get easier on the other side. But right now where they're at, they're climbing up that hill, and they don't want to. None of us do. And so it's our job to encourage that. And that's where the backbone, you have to stick. It's going to slow you down. It's going to cause tears. It's going to cause frustration, but it will get them to the other side of that mountain. And it's going to be, life will be so much easier when they're there than it is now. And it's our job to help them see that. As I said before, the consult with the therapist is crucial. That's the time for you to understand it. And it truly is. Believe me, we can tell whether or not you've listened to us, whether you've tried to work at home, even if there's weeks that it doesn't happen. I know my parents that work at home, and the ones that never do what I ask them to do. And that progress is slower. I can see it in the kids when they come. The other thing I encourage parents to keep in mind, patience and persistence. It's a journey, and it will take time, but your child will get there. One of my favorite stories of that, I worked with a little girl in schools from the time she was like four. It was preschool. And we were working, she was nonverbal. We were working on single picture communication, and she'd play with the pictures. She'd throw them. She'd peel the Velcro off the back. She'd peel the laminate. Over and over and over and over for like 4 years. And it seemed to be going nowhere. We just kept pushing, kept trying to move forward. And I lost track of her for 2 years when the school I was at with her closed and she went to other schools. And I ended up back with her. And she didn't seem to have made much progress. So we plugged in and we did it again. And in one school year, everything clicked. And she just took off. And within, from that point, within 2 years, she was on a device that had 32 locations with 8 different pages. She led the class in the Pledge of Allegiance. She answered questions in class, all with her device. And had we not kept going all those years, there was learning going on. We didn't see it. It was slow, minimal progress at times, but there was. And all that foundation led her to a point where she, within no time at all, took off and could communicate. Her parents were thrilled. She had conversations with, short conversations with them. It was amazing. But that is truly, it took us 8 years to get there, but we got there. And so patience with the system, persistence, keep going, because it does make a difference. It is there. Again, I keep in mind that bonding with a therapist is critical. And especially over time. And I've had parents come to me and say, they'll bring other issues that I never thought as a speech therapist I'd be questioned on. Behavior issues, potty training issues, sleep issues. And while I don't necessarily have the information for them, where I'm at, connected with you, Sarah, and the people I've met, I can refer them to people. So when you're bonded and you trust your therapist, you can bring them other questions and they can help you find the help you need. But you want to be comfortable enough to ask them those things. I also encourage parents to keep in mind, understand school limitations and the difference between private and school therapy. You can't expect the same from both. You need to truly understand the role of both of them. And know that just because they don't qualify for school services doesn't mean they wouldn't benefit from private therapy services, that there's not other things. And if your child is getting school therapy, it doesn't mean that those are the only 3 goals or 4 goals they might have needs on. But as a school therapist, those are the only ones we can, we have to identify the biggest needs. Because we as school therapists, which I've also done school therapy, we have to show progress in a year as much as possible. I can't work on 20 different goals and show progress on all of them. So I pick the 3 most important and we go from there. However, as a private therapist, I can't go to the playground and work on the playground skills. That's something a school therapist can. So there are benefits and wonderful things to both therapists. You just have to understand who can do what. The other big thing I encourage parents to keep in mind, we don't have a magic 8-ball. We can't tell you the timeline. We can't tell you that your child is going to master everything and be done in a year. Not with OT, not with PT, not with speech. It's not a cut and dry formula. We can't plug in something. Everybody progresses at their different pace, at their different level, and there's so many factors. Home factors. Did you practice at home? Is there anything going on at home? Things that you wouldn't necessarily expect can play a role. A friend moving away can cause a setback in any of your therapies because their child's more focused on their friend being gone than what they're learning and developing, any issues at home can impact progress as well. And so to keep that in mind, that it's not, we're not just always going to be moving forward. And as well, you may see plateau times. Don't give up on therapy. You and I at work and everywhere else, we're not always moving up. Sometimes we're just kind of hanging out and getting by and putting our time in. And then we have a huge burst. And I think, think of the typical 2-year-olds that get that huge burst of language and then they don't learn anything, hear any new words for like a week or two. And then they've got one every day, and we aren't constantly moving up. Sometimes we just plateau for a while. Keep going. There'll be another burst. But again, I go back to some of the stories I said. That doesn't mean learning's not happening. Just because we're not showing we've learned something every session doesn't mean it's not getting in and that there's not things, progress being made. The other thing to keep in mind, we as therapists, we want your child to progress. We are pulling for you. We're not trying. Our success is your child's success. When your child doesn't need us anymore, we've succeeded. That's a feather in our cap. We've brought your child to that point. That's our goal. My goal is not to keep you around forever. My goal is to get you back out there so you don't need me. Having said that, if I'm telling you your child needs therapy, I'm being honest with you. I'm not trying to keep you around forever. There's lots of kids that need therapy. We need to keep moving forward, but we are being honest with you. We're telling you what we observe and what we see. And I tell parents a lot, because I've heard this in meetings at schools particularly a lot. He does that at home. He does that at home. And so I try to tell parents, I believe you. I do. I see it in my own kids, things they do at home, and then they go to school and they get it wrong on a test. But that's just it. My daughter can sit here and spell every word correctly, and then she goes to school and misspells two on the test. I can go to her teacher and say, she spelled them right at home. She's still going to get them wrong on the test. They're not going to say, oh, well, mom said she spelled them right, so we'll just give her credit. They have, part of knowing and mastering a skill is being able to perform it outside of home. So if they aren't doing it for me, I'm going to tell you that. It's not that I don't believe you that they're doing it at home. It's just that they're not doing it everywhere. And we need them to be able to do it everywhere, because they're not going to just communicate at home. They're not going to just write at home. They're going to write in school. And in the future, they're going to write at jobs and talk at jobs and talk in the community. So they need to be able to perform those skills outside of the home as well. And again, the other thing is, you are with your child much more than the therapist. Think of us as the catalyst for change. We're the spark. You're the one that keeps the fire burning. We start that skill, but you're the one that's going to make it part of their everyday life. And the more important you make a skill in their everyday life, the more they understand that it's important. If they only practice tying their shoes in therapy and you never make them practice at home, then why do they really need to learn it? If they only ever have to request for something in therapy and they never have to use their words at home, then what's the point? You know, they don't see the need for communication. They don't see the need to do things for their, you know, dress themselves or tie their shoes, because you're not demanding it of them. And unless you want to follow your child around the rest of their life, our goal as parents, as much as we sometimes, it hurts, is to make them independent. We want them to be able to function without us. That's a successful child. And so the last thing I hear from parents then is, but how do I fit it into my everyday life? And that is a trick. And I tell parents sometimes it's easier to do than you think, but there are times it's just not going to happen. And I get that too. There are days that it's all you can do to feed them and get homework done and get them into bed. I get it. You don't have anything left in you. And that's, I totally understand that. And so it doesn't have to be every day, but the more you make it a priority, the faster your child will make progress. And so when I tell parents is that one of the things I encourage parents is smaller, more frequent practice is better than long practice. First of all, 20 and 30 minutes or more of a practice of any skill only increases frustration. You know, 5 minutes here or there does not seem as daunting as 20 to 30 minutes. And I don't often have a free half hour, but I do have a free 5 minutes between, you know, cooking and homework. I might have 5 minutes or whatnot. So it's easier to fit in when you do smaller increments as well. And then I tell parents, a lot of times this means slowing down and letting children help you or letting children do that which you could do much faster on your own. If they're trying to, you know, have your child write the grocery list, and I know that's going to take five times longer for them to write the list than for you to make a list, but with every word they're writing, they're practicing writing. Have your child order his own food at a restaurant, and while you may have to work on and back him up if the waiter can't understand them, it's still, A, it's showing the importance of communication, and B, it's putting power in his lap and control that he gets to order. And you're taking that 2 minutes of practice. And if she doesn't understand, you can use the cues, help him say it again, but it is going to go slower. Try to judge your server, because some won't be patient enough for that. But in the right setting, that is very powerful. Have them order at McDonald's for themselves. You know, have them help you wrap a present. Clearly, that's going to take three times longer. It takes me three times longer with my children. And you might waste a little more tape than you would normally if you do it yourself. But they're learning all of those skills. They're learning sequencing skills. You're talking about what you're doing. They're learning how to use the scissors to cut and how to rip tape. And all, there's lots of skills that go into something as simple as wrapping a present. I encourage parents to think outside the box when you try to incorporate it into your everyday life. So do it in the car when you're doing errands. We all have errands to do. Put your child in the car. Talk about what you see out the window. Talk about the three things you have or four places you have to stop and help them learn the sequence. We did that. What's next? What comes after that? You know, so now you're working on sequencing. What are we going to do at the grocery store? What are we going to do? What do we have to do at the bank? You know, and so now they're learning what do we do at different places. You know, you're building all of those connections and those skills without really having to take special time out of your day. Or you talk about, you know, my son has now thinks that every drive to school to pick up his brother and sister is opposites time because we do opposites every time. But that's what we practice. The 5-minute drive to school, we practice opposites. Practice while you wait at restaurants. We all, you know, pretty much all of us go out to restaurants. You're sitting and waiting for your food. Take a pad to doodle on. Talk about something there. Instead of just giving the iPad to kill the time, use that 5 or 10 minutes as therapy time and you work on the skills then. If your child is working on going up steps, forego the elevator, even for one flight. And walk up one flight of stairs together and then go catch the elevator if it's a time factor. I'm a huge proponent of crafts at home. Let them make a mess. Get out the glue and the foam shapes and the stickers. All of that manipulative is great for fine motor skills. It's also great language. What color do you want? What do you need now? What you know, how does the glue feel? I mean, there's so much language development with crafts as well as fine motor development. Another one I encourage parents, baking is huge. Bake with your kids. There is so much to baking. There's language, there's motor skills, there's sequencing, there's, you know, cause and effect. And it's fun. It's fun to watch them. There's a ton of simple recipes, you know, whether it's actual baking or you make salt dough or, you know, there's lots of things that you can do with the kids in the kitchen that encourage so many skills and as well as accomplishment. When you bake a cookie and dad or mom or grandma comes over and you have a plate of cookies and they helped, it is such a self-esteem builder to present that to someone that they did. I know a cutting one some of my friends and my OT friends would do. They would take all the coupons that come in the papers or in the mail, and they'd have their kids cut them all, call all of them out. And they only need maybe, now, if you really want the coupon, you may not want to have them cut because it might get cut in half. But that would encourage cutting. There's lines. It's a pre-made cutting activity for your kid. Read. But don't just read to them. Read with them. Talk about the pictures on the page. Don't worry about getting to the end so much as what do you see here? What do you think is going to happen next? What was he doing when he did this? You know, talk about the book you read and then talk about it afterwards. What was your favorite part of the book? Who did that? Who was doing this or what were they doing or where did they go? All of those questions build skills, build language. So read. I can't, that's a huge one. I know OT, and again, an OT thing. I did it for my kids. I bought lace-up shoes. I did not buy the Velcro. And there are times when Velcro is necessary, and I'm not putting that down. But for a child, if you're learning to tie, buy the tie. And what that encourages is, I can't back out and not tie them. Like, I may have to tie them, but the more I have to tie them, the more I'm going to encourage my child to tie them. And I did that with my daughter, and by the end of kindergarten, she was tying, but we were sick of tying them in kindergarten, so we made her learn how to tie them. If it's possible, force yourself to buy those lace-up shoes because that will encourage you to work on tying every time you put those on. The other thing I encourage people to do is let your child help with chores. Again, you may have to go back and fix something, and you may have to, you know, do it, go behind them and fix it. But again, practicing sweeping the floors, putting their toys away. Putting toys away is a good one because if you have 3 bins, now we're working on sorting and what goes in this bin versus this bin versus this bin. So we're learning categories and we're developing communicative skills there as well. As well as, you know, if we sweep the floor, okay, we swept it into a pile. Now what do we have to do? Well, now we have to, you know, put it in the dustpan and throw it away. And there's, again, that whole sequencing concept. I'll be the first to admit that incorporating therapy skills and things that we're working on is going to make virtually any task longer. But it's showing the children that it's not just a therapy time. It is all day, every day is what we do. And that these skills are important for their life. It happens, you know, and it's the same as when I tell my daughter when she says she doesn't want to practice her multiplication facts. You are going to multiply every day, probably the rest of your life. You are going to use that math skill always. You know, that's a skill you have to have. Communicating as much as possible to make them as independent as possible is a skill they're going to have. You know, if we want them to be independent with eating and dressing and things like that, they have to practice. You know, every child has to practice. It's just a matter of how long till they master a skill. And again, it's okay if you don't practice every day, but the more you show your child how important it is, the faster the progress will be. And that's it.